Welcome to Trend in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Our top story: President Trump is expected to meet Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping at the end of October. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent predicts a pretty big breakthrough in trade talks. And as leaders in Beijing prepare for a key party summit, experts say Xi may be losing his grip on power. U.S. federal agents revealing they've disrupted a China-linked plot aimed at crippling cell networks in New York City. The scheme involves hundreds of SIM servers and thousands of SIM cards. Officials warn the threat is on an unprecedented scale. The U.S. Secretary of the Army calling China and Russia threats to the Korean Peninsula. What he said about the danger from Chinese-made drones.
One of the biggest threats for mankind is drones.
And the Chinese Communist Party is marking 76 years in power, but dissidents are calling it a national tragedy. In Canada, the regime's flag was flown upside down. In New York, protesters rallied, demanding an end to the CCP.
Down with the Communist Party and the CCP's tyranny.
Before we dive into today's news, don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter using the link down below. In tomorrow's newsletter, we take a closer look at China's K-Visa program and what it means for the global race for innovation and jobs. It drops Friday morning straight to your inbox. Don't miss it. President Trump is expected to meet Chinese regime leader Xi Jinping at the end of October. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent predicts a pretty big breakthrough in the next round of trade talks. Here's a closer look.
Soybeans are one of Beijing's main bargaining chips in U.S. trade talks. U.S. farmers are busy harvesting this year's crop, but so far, China hasn't placed any orders. President Trump is expected to meet with China's Xi Jinping on the sidelines of the APEC summit in South Korea to discuss the issue.
What gives us great comfort is the respect that the two leaders have for each other, so it'll be very helpful for them to be able to speak in person and set the framework for trade going forward. So I think with President Trump's leadership and his relationship, the respect that Party Chair Xi has for him, that this round, which would be our fifth round of talks, should show a pretty big breakthrough.
Bessent says the White House will announce a support plan for farmers, especially soybean growers, next Tuesday. The trade truce between the U.S. and China runs out on November 10th. On Tuesday, U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer said the tariffs on Chinese imports, around 55%, remain a good status quo.
On Wednesday, President Trump posted on Truth Social, promising to make China's soybean purchases a major topic when he meets Chinese leader Xi Jinping in 4 weeks. The meeting is expected to take place on the sidelines of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in South Korea. However, Beijing has not confirmed whether Xi will attend. In his post, Trump also pledged to send bailout aid to U.S. farmers using tariff revenues, saying the farmers are being hurt as China holds back purchases. Since the U.S. harvest began, China hasn't placed a single order for American soybeans, instead buying from South American suppliers. One of the most serious threats ever found on American soil aims straight at the nation's communication systems. The U.S. Secret Service says it has uncovered a China-linked plot in New York City, a coordinated plan to cripple cell towers, jam 911 calls, and throw the city's communications into chaos. The investigation began as world leaders were getting ready to arrive in New York City for the United Nations General Assembly. Federal agents found more than 100,000 SIM cards and over 300 SIM servers at multiple sites across New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Together, these devices could send up to 30 million texts in just 1 minute. Investigators later discovered another 200,000 SIM cards at a location in New Jersey. Officials say this massive network of devices was poised to knock out cell service across New York City. U.S. Secret Service Director Sean Curran said in a statement, quote, "The potential for disruption to our country's telecommunications posed by this network of devices cannot be overstated." Officials are now working to track who rented the spaces, the source of the network, and the ultimate goal of the plot. We'll keep you updated as authorities work the case. A new report from the U.S. State Department lists China as one of the world's worst offenders when it comes to forced labor. The report says state-sponsored forced labor is widespread in China, with nearly 4 million people exploited. Officials are estimated to have made over $230 billion from this practice. One group targeted by forced labor are Uyghur Muslim minorities in China's Xinjiang region. Despite reports of officials involved in or benefiting from forced labor and sex trafficking, the Chinese regime has taken no action to investigate or prosecute those responsible. U.S. Secretary of the Army Daniel Driscoll highlighting both China and North Korea as threats to the region. He speaks during a visit to the main base of U.S. forces in South Korea.
I think the short answer is that both are pacing threats.
Driscoll also highlights the threat from the large number of drones being produced by China and Russia.
One of the biggest threats for mankind is drones. The amount of drones that are being manufactured right now, I think China manufactured 13 million, Russians have manufactured 4 million. Just the sheer volume of the threat and what they can do is just kind of a very new thing that humanity has to deal with.
He says combating the drone threat requires a close partnership with South Korea and local tech companies, and that sharing real-time information with allies is key to tracking the drones. The U.S. maintains about 28,000 troops in South Korea. It's part of Washington's effort to deter nuclear-armed North Korea. The Chinese Communist Party and its overseas embassies are marking the 76th anniversary of the founding of the CCP regime. But in Canada, the CCP's red flag was seen flying upside down in front of the Chinese embassy. Meanwhile, many Chinese people, both inside China and abroad, say they see this day as one of national suffering. In New York, Chinese dissidents gathered outside the Chinese consulate in Manhattan to protest.
We're protesting the 76th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party's usurpation of power. They call it National Day. We call it a national tragedy.
People familiar with Chinese history know that it was Chiang Kai-shek's Kuomintang government that led China to victory over fascism in World War II. Meanwhile, the Chinese Communist Party was building its own strength during that time. After Japan surrendered, the CCP launched a civil war, pushing the exhausted Kuomintang forces to retreat to Taiwan.
What was founded in 1949 wasn't a legitimate government chosen by the people. It was the beginning of a brutal dictatorship, a one-party regime that took power without any democratic mandate.
For more than 70 years, the Chinese Communist Party has carried out political campaigns targeting people across all social classes and ethnic groups. The most notorious examples are the Cultural Revolution and the persecution of the Falun Gong spiritual group, which began in 1999.
Down with the Communist Party and the CCP's tyranny.
As the Chinese Communist Party marked its anniversary, the Chinese embassy in Ottawa, Canada, was seen flying the communist flag upside down. The city of Philadelphia raised the flag of Communist China on Tuesday to commemorate the day on which the Chinese Communist Party declared rule in China, October 1, 1949. The event was co-organized by a group with ties to the Chinese regime, and it drew criticism from lawmakers and human rights activists. To discuss this in detail, NTD's Kevin Hogan was joined by Victoria Coates, a national security and foreign policy expert at the Heritage Foundation.
Thank you for contributing today, Victoria. Pennsylvania State Senator Doug Mastriano condemned raising the CCP flag over Philadelphia City Hall. He says Americans should be standing with victims of oppression, not honoring their oppressors. What does this mean, that the birthplace of the American Constitution is raising the communist flag?
Now, it's just a disgrace, and all credit to Senator Mastriano for raising the flag on this issue. Apparently, it's been going on for a couple of years, and they kind of try to do it, you know, under the radar so people don't get outraged about it. But this year, he shined a light on it. And this has to stop. As you said, this is a network of groups throughout the United States that are trying, under the guise of cultural exchange, to extend the CCP's reach into the United States proper, and to do it here in Philadelphia, my home city, which is, as you say, the birthplace of liberty. The first American flag was stitched less than a mile from where this happened. It's absolutely outrageous. And so we couldn't stop it in Philadelphia this year. But I think we should raise the alarm across the country and just stop these displays of CCP power.
And looking further into this, the founder of the campaign for Uyghurs points to the CCP's genocide against Uyghurs to say that flying the Chinese regime's flag legitimizes terror and betrays the people who fled communist China in search of freedom in the U.S. So how do you see it?
Oh, I agree with that 100%. And the mayor of Philadelphia is trying to excuse this as part of Diversity Day, and that this is a celebration of Philadelphia's vibrant Chinese American community, which is a vital part of our city. And then, but there are so many ways to honor them. We have the Lantern Festival, which is a celebration of traditional Chinese culture. It's so popular, it became an annual event in Philadelphia. That's a great way to honor them. But many of them fled the very persecution represented by that flag. So this is more of an insult to them as well as to the Uyghurs. And I just, it's really beyond the pale to do that in Philadelphia.
So, Victoria, just recently we heard China's Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin publicly discussing immortality through organ transplants. And as we've reported extensively, the CCP has a history of forcibly harvesting the organs of prisoners of conscience, primarily from the persecuted Falun Gong spiritual group, some of whom live in Philadelphia, as you were mentioning. Now, what more needs to happen before city officials or state or federal lawmakers ban such a thing?
Now, that hot mic moment for Putin and Xi, I thought was one of the most interesting things that's happened this year. You get insight into what they're actually talking about. And are they talking about doing good things for the Chinese and the Russian people? No, they're talking about harvesting their organs so they can live forever. And everyone who extols Putin as some sort of, you know, conservative Christian leader should listen to that tape and think about what it means for where his head is and where Chairman Xi's head is. So, yeah, I mean, that is, I think, really a very clear indicator of the intents of those two rulers. And so going forward, you know, if we couldn't stop this flag raising this time, but my goal would be to put so much pressure on City Hall in Philadelphia, possibly through Harrisburg. I'm sure Senator Mastriano will be interested. Chairman Molinar of the Select Committee down here in Washington in the Congress wrote a very strong letter about this to get this banned going forward.
We've looked at some of the big picture items. Let's get into the specifics. Victoria, you discovered that this event was sponsored by the Pennsylvania United Chinese Coalition. What's their motivation? Is it cultural exchange? I mean, you said it wasn't. Is it to bolster the CCP's reputation? Why?
Well, the exchange says, that, or they say they're there to do a cultural exchange. But if you look at their website, and I don't want to claim to read Chinese, but one of my members of my staff does, and they're pretty harsh on Taiwan and anything having to do with that. And clearly what they're trying to do is demonstrate soft power in the United States. And there was a lot of outrage recently over their sort of shadow police stations that they're establishing to persecute Chinese dissidents here in the United States. And so they're trying to create a network that normalizes this kind of action. So you know, it happens every couple, you know, every year. It's just a flag. Is it a big deal? Yes, it is a big deal. It is highly symbolic. And, you know, to extend this into a city like Philadelphia, you know, is really, I think, quite telling. They're trying to claim the ground on which our founders had both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And that's why it has to stop.
Victoria Coates, thank you for coming on and making sense of this.
Well, thank you for covering it.
An alleged fraud case is unfolding. The Department of Justice says a Colorado-based forklift importer is accused of selling forklifts made in China, claiming they were made in America. Here's Assistant U.S. Attorney General Abigail Slater.
According to our indictment, defendants ripped off taxpayers by selling China-manufactured forklifts, and to add insult to injury, they ripped off taxpayers even more by avoiding lawful tariff payments. The defendant's conduct means you were forced to pay more money through your taxes for forklifts that were made in China. It means something to be made in America. It means American innovation and ingenuity. It also means American jobs. This DOJ will not tolerate criminals who undermine Buy American and our tariffs.
Three executives of Octane Forklifts and Endless Sales have been indicted for defrauding the federal government. Prosecutors say they certified China-made forklifts as U.S.-made and sold them to the Departments of War and Homeland Security, a violation of the Buy American Act. Two company executives and one former executive are accused of wire fraud, tariff evasion, and falsifying documents to undervalue imports. Officials say the scheme cost the U.S. more than $1 million in unpaid tariffs. Attorney General Pam Bondi said defrauding the United States with goods from adversarial nations like China undermines economic and national security.
Coming up, Chinese fast fashion giant Shein set to open its first store in France. But the decision is sparking backlash from local retailers, worried about its impact on local competition. China positioning two aircraft carriers near the South China Sea, including its newest and most advanced ship. A look at what this means for security in the Taiwan Strait. And the U.S. planning to return humans to the moon in 2 years. But where does America stand in the race with China? More on that after the break here on China in Focus. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Chinese fast fashion giant Shein plans to open its first store in France this November. But French retailers are pushing back strongly. They say Shein's super cheap clothes, made in China and shipped directly to customers, are hurting local businesses and flooding the market with disposable fashion. Even Galeries Lafayette, whose franchise partner is hosting the Shein store, says it opposes the plan and wants to stop it. Shein keeps prices low by shipping small packages from China that don't have to pay customs fees, a tax break the European Union plans to end soon. The current European Union rule exempts shipments under $176 from duties. French lawmakers are also working on new rules that could stop Shein from advertising in France. Critics worry that once Shein's store opens, local shops will have an even harder time competing. New satellite photos reveal Beijing's newest aircraft carrier, Fujian, docked side-by-side with its second carrier, Shandong, near the South China Sea. The new carrier is named after Fujian province in southern China, located just across the Taiwan Strait. It's China's most advanced carrier, the first built entirely by Chinese shipyards. The carrier Fujian is set to be commissioned later this year. That move raises uncertainty about peace in the Taiwan Strait. The Pentagon has previously said Chinese leader Xi Jinping has ordered troops to be ready for a possible invasion of Taiwan by 2027. That's less than 2 years away. Meanwhile, the U.S. holds the world's largest aircraft carrier fleet with a total of 11 vessels. NASA plans to send humans back to the moon by 2027. Key figures involved in the mission explain how it will happen and what the future on the moon might look like. And once again, this race is mainly between the United States and China. Here's more.
Igniters initiate. NASA will send four astronauts on a 10-day voyage around the moon in 2026, the latest step in a mission to land humans on the lunar surface for the first time in more than five decades.
We rise together, back to the moon and beyond.
But the current Artemis program has different goals and methods to the Apollo landings of the 60s and 70s, involving moon bases and missions to Mars.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Artemis, named after the twin sister to Apollo, was spawned by U.S. President Donald Trump's first presidency. There are also other plans to land humans on the moon. Most notably China, which has in recent years invested heavily in its space program, wants to achieve the feat by 2030. But at present, Artemis is likely to be first. It's a series of missions including Artemis 3, which currently expects to return humans to the moon in 2027, though space analysts expect that date to slip. In addition to scientific discovery and exploration, that longer-term presence is part of another goal, as humans take further steps into our solar system.
And that's going to prepare us to send astronauts to Mars.
One of the companies working with NASA on Artemis is Firefly Aerospace. In February, it became the second U.S. company to land on the moon, using its Blue Ghost lander propelled by a SpaceX rocket. Firefly CEO Jason Kim.
The gravity on the moon is much lighter than on Earth. And because of that, taking things and taking off of the moon's surface and taking resources to Mars is actually more straightforward than doing it from Earth.
The involvement of commercial partners such as Firefly is one way, Glaze said, in which Artemis differs from Apollo. But she also sees a commercial future for the moon's surface through what she described as a lunar economy.
So we very well could see commercial activities going on at the moon with other companies visiting on a routine basis.
The Interlune harvesting system involves...
One business hoping to profit is Interlune. It wants to extract helium-3 from the lunar regolith, the loose layer of rocks and debris on the moon's surface. Helium-3 has a variety of uses on Earth, including in national security, healthcare, and quantum computing. It's rare on Earth, but abundant on the moon, says co-founder and CEO Rob Myerson.
Helium-3 sells for $20 million a kilogram. So it is the only resource in the universe that is priced high enough to warrant going to space and bringing it back to Earth today.
Myerson said Interlune's method is mindful of protecting the lunar surface and that the regolith is replaced so that what is left looks like a tilled field. Asked about a private company profiting from what is seen as a global asset, he said Interlune would never claim any part of the moon as its own and that it was serving customers in important areas. According to a report from the NASA Office of Inspector General, the Artemis program was expected to cost $93 billion from 2012 through to 2025. However, cuts proposed to the NASA budget by the Trump administration would axe key parts of the program. Glaze said NASA has suppliers across the U.S. and that the funding for the Artemis program is invested in every state.
So we are generating jobs, and for every dollar that we spend on this hardware, $3 comes back into the U.S. Treasury.
Glaze says the moon could look like a very different place in the next 50 to 100 years, citing the commercial activities there and the sustained NASA presence. Myerson said the reusability of rockets, such as SpaceX's Falcon 9, has been a key step in lowering the cost of access to space. What's next, he predicts, is building things in space using resources sourced in space, removing the need to launch materials from Earth.
Then you can start to think about really long-term practical things, building out giant space stations where people live that have, you know, that rotate to simulate gravity. Once you have fusion reactors on Earth, you can start to think about building direct fusion drive propulsion that gets us between the Earth and Mars in, you know, 30 to 60 days instead of 6 to 7 months.
However, such plans raise ethical questions, says Dr. David Jeevandrampalai, a lecturer in social anthropology at the University of Manchester, who specializes in outer space.
So if you're building infrastructure on the moon, if you're taking the moon's resources, is that enabling a transition of resources to the wealthy? Is it enabling a transition of moon territory and sovereignty and the moon as a cultural object to the few?
Almost every culture, Jeevandrampalai said, has some form of moon myth or relationship with the moon. Therefore, he argued, such space programs should feature more international dialogue around their cultural implications. What if one person's future building, he asked, is another person's denigration of a sacred space?
That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you tomorrow.